This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Search Security. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 77th in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm very pleased to have with me today Gary Warzala. Hi, Gary.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. Gary Warzala is CISO for Visa. He started out his career at GE Aerospace in upstate New York. While at GE, Gary transitioned from technical infrastructure roles to senior management positions encompassing telecommunications, architecture, application development, and information security. In 2003, he joined Aon, where he developed a global IT risk management organization. In 2010, Gary joined Visa as the Chief Information Security Officer. Gary holds a BS from Utica College and an MBA from Xavier. He lives in the Bay Area near his two grown children, Christy and Corey. So the first thing I want to ask you is pretty simple, but nobody's really sure what the answer is. So I'm interested in your perspective. What exactly does a CISO do all day?
I build up a lot of anxiety, I think, is what I do. You know, I think what I do all day is really more than anything, lead and develop my organization. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I want to really understand if we have a good handle of risk in the enterprise, and are we applying the appropriate resources to manage that risk? And working towards building a high-performing team. That's what I think I do most of the days.
Mm-hmm. So senior management more than anything else.
Yeah, that's what I would say it is, Gary. You know, it's being able to work with the executive team and articulate what we're working on and why we're working on it, and if we need resources, why that is and how much and what type of a return, not an ROI, but what are the expectations that I can set with the senior execs in terms of what the expectations are with these investments. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of it is credibility, you know, having trust in my organization, we're doing the right thing for the business.
Right. So you have an MBA. Did that help you with your security career? Did that kind of change your approach to things at all?
Yeah, part of the reason I went for my MBA was to, I use the word balance a lot. So I was trying to balance a technical side with a business side. And the MBA was one of the best things I ever did. I think it really did help when I think about when I took it and where my career went after that. Mm-hmm. It helped me so much on the business side, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So you use those concepts to communicate with the other senior executives, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that, the information security professional has kind of morphed, right? We used to be viewed as that nerdy backroom person and, you know, we need an interpreter to talk to us. And it's morphed more now into a risk management type role. And the business is very interested in having those conversations at that level. So, you know, I think it's been a healthy change.
The annual Verizon breach report shows that we continually suffer from more of the same old, if things aren't getting worse. So what are the underlying causes of our security woes these days, and what are you trying to do about them at Visa?
Yeah. You know, when you look at the, I agree with you 100%, right? I mean, the root causes haven't really changed. And the sophistication of the root causes really haven't changed either, right? It's a lot of the basic security fundamentals that are not done well that get exploited that lead to problems. So, of course, I mean, there are a few of those examples with very sophisticated attacks, but, you know, for the most part, those are few and far between. So, you know, I don't think even the technology has let us down as much as the people side of the equation. And I think my philosophy is really morphed into, if you have the right people with the right process and the right technology, you can address those fundamental information security activities or programs that will help secure your business, your enterprise. So for me personally, it really starts with the people. I think if you have a strong organization, the right skills that can effectively utilize the investments in technology and build the processes around the program, I think you'll, for the most part, you'll be fine.
So that you kind of stole my next question, which is great.
Okay.
But I can push further. How do you identify and then retain good people if people are kind of the main part of the equation of people,
yeah,
organization, and technology?
You know, I'll just say, fortunately for me, it's easy because of the brand. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so here's how I would describe it. I was doing an interview last year and I was talking, it was for one of our cyber roles. And during the course of the conversation, the interview, we got into this concept of, you know, when there's a problem, do you run to the fire or do you run away from the fire?
Right.
And that's a great way to think about it. Right. And when we interview people, when I interview people, I'm looking for people who are going to run to the fire. People who are not afraid to be working in a high energy, tense situation, right? And I have no problem finding those people, because those people that apply for the positions here at Visa, they know what they're getting into up front. These are people who want to run to the fires. And so for me, it's quite easy. For other people in different verticals, it might be a little bit more challenging, but those people are out there, and you know, you just have to be persistent in finding them.
Mm-hmm. How about retention? Do you do anything special over there to, with regard to career paths or anything else to retain good people?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the health of the organization, right? So I have all these little sayings. I don't know how cute they are, but you know, I always gauge the health of my organization by, think about it as a revolving door. Do you have more people coming in or leaving? And I think that my retention is strong because the organization has lots of different avenues for people to grow and advance. You know, when you think about people in the information security field, very rarely do they leave the field, right? I mean, how often do you hear about really strong professionals in the space moving into development or moving into, you know, technology areas? Mm-hmm. They are so passionate about security. If you can build a healthy environment where people have progression in their career paths, they're not going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really experienced. So it's hard to get them to leave. Sometimes it is really right. They may have other talents in other areas, and you might say, hey, you know, you might have a great career path moving down in this space or working in the business, and you have to pry them out sometimes. They just are so passionate about what they do. That's a great thing for us.
So one of the interesting things about your business is how consumer-facing it is. Everybody has a copy of your product in their wallet.
Yep.
Do you think consumers know or even need to know the difference between security software and software security, just to get technical about the whole thing?
No, I don't think they need to know. I don't think they do know. And honestly, I don't think they care.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they care about is, at the end of the day, if they're going to use that card or they're going to go online and they're going to select the Visa brand, they only want to know that the trust and security is there. And I think that's what they care about.
So leave it to the geeks. I mean, the problem is that security is in some sense invisible. And so people can make claims about security that may not be true. And it's hard to differentiate between a strong brand where people are doing the right thing, like Visa, and maybe some fly-by-night brand where people are making claims, but they're not true claims.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. But at the end of the day, Gary, it's going to catch up with you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And, you know, when people have a choice between, say, a Visa and another brand, and that other brand could be a big global name, right? But maybe that hasn't been their their core competency. People, I believe, our marketing organization, I've seen information from them. People are going to lean towards the brand that they associate with security and with trust.
Yeah, trust for sure, and security is a key part of that.
Yep.
We'll be right back after this message. This is Gary McGraw, your host for the Silver Bullet Security Podcast. If you like what you're hearing here, you should check out my monthly security column published by Search Security and Information Security Magazine. You can find the most recent column at searchsecurity.com/McGraw. All of my writings are collected on my webpage at www.sigital.com/gem/writings. Thanks for listening. So in terms of the whole space of security, do you think we've made progress in software security? I know that your history includes both application development and InfoSec. So you have an interesting view of the problem, I think. What do you think?
I think that we have made incremental progress. We have so much further to go. You know, companies like yourself, Sigital, I think have nothing but a huge upside, because there is still so much work to be done in developing secure software. Mm-hmm. And I think we're making inroads, but it's not fast enough. And I really think a lot of it stems from our current, you know, I'll say our higher education system. Mm-hmm. You know, we teach people how to develop, but we don't really teach people how to develop securely, mm-hmm. right? We teach people how to develop quickly, and that's a constant problem.
Yeah, I always think it's funny that on the first day of mechanical engineering class, they try to scare the heck out of you by showing the Tacoma Narrows Bridge shaking itself to death. But on the first day of computer science class, they go, "Hello world" is what we're programming.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a different view of the universe.
Yeah, it's got to start earlier, Gary. You know, we can't do it in the enterprise, right? Mm-hmm. It's too costly, and there's too much risk that we introduce.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you that later, but let's do it now. How can the education system, and in particular the higher education system, address the problem of security engineering more effectively than it is now?
Yeah, you know, I think that we're starting to make inroads. So, you know, we just held a U.S. Cyber Challenge here in the Bay Area, and it was a collaborative effort between Visa, San Jose State University, and the Bay Area Council. Mm-hmm. And then we had a number of other sponsors that basically defrayed the cost for the students who participated in that. Mm-hmm. You know, the president of San Jose State University, President Naomi Kiyomi, he totally understands the fact that we need to change the curriculum, and we need to start really talking more about security, and in this particular case, cybersecurity, mm-hmm. and building it into the curriculum. So I think that people at his level are starting to understand that we need to do more at this, more in this space. And so I think there's more and more dialogue occurring, which is the first step in really addressing the problem.
I tend to agree with you. I think that most strong programs in engineering understand that you need to think about risk and attack while you're building stuff. Maybe it stems from robustness alone, but I think lately, because of the way things have been going historically, the problem of security is becoming more obvious, I suppose.
And it's only going to become more and more so, Gary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about the push at the national level, right, to build a cybersecurity workforce, you know, that's a great initiative, and it's raising awareness across the country.
Well, as long as it focuses on building security in and not reactive security, I would agree with you.
Well, I think that's exactly right, exactly. But I think it is moving in that direction. I think that they are really trying to articulate the stakes that are involved, really, at the national level. And it all revolves around having people who understand how to secure the enterprise and you know, getting those conversations started before you enter the workforce.
Mm-hmm. So you have a broad InfoSec program that does global risk management. How does software security fit into that?
Specifically, what are you looking to drive with the question?
Well, if you had to, say, build a big world view of your whole global risk management purview, what would the major continents be? Would software security be one of the major continents now, or is it something that you find on each continent? How do you think about it yourself?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the way I view it is there's no geo division, if you will, for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I would say that it's clearly a little more challenging as we start moving a little bit away from, you know, the contiguous 48 states here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have a program that we are able to drive across the geographic boundaries, and we have what I call security champions that are located in key regions, and those security champions drive the program. So even though they may not be near the core, if you will, they have the same philosophies and the same tools and capabilities, and that helps significantly.
Do they intermingle with the operational risk people and the consumer fraud people? Do you have sort of blended teams?
You know, we are starting to do that. You know, when I came here, what I wanted to do was, you know, raise the level of maturity of a few of our programs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've accomplished that. And now we're starting to really interface more with our enterprise risk group, with our fraud team.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I just put together a proposal at one of our locations on the East Coast called Fusion Center. We're really bringing together all these different disciplines, and we're going to work and commingle together. And we believe that this close collaboration is really going to benefit, you know, both the enterprise risk and fraud, as well as the more traditional security organization.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to security, how do you measure it yourself? And which of those measures do you find useful when you're talking to senior executives and trying to garner resources?
Yeah, so for me, it is all about risk. So for me, can I articulate what the top enterprise risks are? And so, you know, so I have responsibility for all IT risk, but the majority of the conversation really revolves around information security and continuity services.
Mm-hmm.
So can I clearly articulate what those top five enterprise risks are? And can I articulate what the risk mitigating initiatives are in place that are addressing those? And can I measure, can I try to quantify what those risks are and what the residual risks will be after the initiatives are complete?
Mm-hmm.
And can I have a consistent conversation from the last time I met with the board or I met with the executive team? Can they follow the progression? And so, you know, for me personally, it's all about risk and being able to articulate risk. And of course, the challenge is, you know, quantifying that. Sometimes I think it's more art than science, but, you know, we're making investments in our risk program to continually work on refining our approach.
Yeah, one of the challenges, I guess, that some executives face in security is if you do your job properly, nothing happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you go to the board and you go, hey, nothing happened. That doesn't work so well. If you frame the problem in terms of risk like you do, I guess it's more effective.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you have a strong cyber organization and a good threat intel arm to that organization, you have no lack of conversation starters. Let me just put it that way.
Sure. You can always point to small fires, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's an indication of how well we're performing against our known threats and adversaries.
Right. So here's a little pile of tinder that's ready to catch on fire. What are your thoughts about mobile security?
Oh, my gosh. So in an hour, we're having a session here at Visa, and we've brought in speakers from five or six different areas, representatives from Qualcomm and Sprint and Inside Secure. We have representatives from some of the universities. And it's all to talk about, you know, the current security mobile platform. And, you know, I have a lot of concerns around where we are at the moment. It's more than the device itself, right? It's the channels and it's the network and it's the operating system and
Absolutely.
It's the firmware. And I haven't even gotten to the application yet, right?
Right.
It's
Absolutely.
This huge ecosystem. And the problem is that I can't manage or influence or control hardly any of it.
And it moves incredibly fast.
It does. Yeah. I mean, even patches to the operating system, right, are infrequent if they come at all. And some of those patches may be absolutely critical to the platform that I'm running on. So, you know, I think we have a learning curve to go here, and I think there are a lot of participants in this. And, you know, we all know that, you know, malware and mobile are completely intertwined and interlinked at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the fascinating thing is there's really still very little value on these devices or what they have access to at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But we know as we start really increasing the importance, the value of these devices and the data they contain or the data they may have access to, you know, the sophistication of these attacks are just going to rise exponentially. So we have to be ready for that. How's that sound?
It sounds like an opportunity.
Yeah, it does.
One of the interesting ways to think about it that I've heard is, you know, when you lose your computer, when you lose your laptop, that's a problem.
Yep.
And yet people lose their phone all the time, and it's becoming more and more like losing your laptop.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are we going to do when we can't find our phone and it's connected to the global payment system?
Exactly.
Fun and games. A question just completely out of left field, which I always do at the end of these things. What is your favorite fiction book of all time?
I don't really know if I have a favorite fiction book, Gary. I'm more of a nonfiction person.
Uh-huh.
And so
you're welcome to turn the question any way you see
yeah.
fit.
Yeah. Well, I just read a book called The Debt Bomb.
Uh-huh.
Right, that seems very apropos with our upcoming election. And so I kind of live more in that space, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it fits with the job that I'm in. I try to stay real.
You try to stay away from fiction.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet you're a security professional.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks for your time. This has been fun.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure talking to you, Gary.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Search Security. The July-August 2012 issue of IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine is a special issue on internet infrastructure. The Silver Bullet interview features our conversation with Randy Sabbat. See www.computer.org/security for more. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.sigil.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.